message to the Department of Health, which complaint I learned about it just when I walked into this room. I was informed by the Department of Health that the complaint was sent to them. So I'll go through that complaint once I've received it so that we determine what you need to do. So I'm yet to receive that complaint, but it's a matter that we'll discuss with the department. The third issue related to Ms. Angela Drescher, who's acting on behalf of a number of medical, of Discovery Health medical schemes. We're aware of the services that she's rendered. She's indicating that she's acting pro bono, and she's in the social media using different platforms where she's inviting everybody who's got a complaint to contact her. Then she'll take those complaints on their behalf to CMS, and she has done so. We've received her complaint, which was voluminous, representing something like 18 to 22 members relating to prescribed minimum benefits, alleging that Discovery has acted in contravention of the Medical Schemes Act. They failed to uphold the act because they've acted in a particular way. So we've dealt with that particular complaint. We've resolved it. We've issued a ruling. She has received that. But what she's doing at the moment, she's inviting the public that they need to submit more complaints to her, meaning that she's rendering these services as a pro bono. She's referring those complaints to us as well as the department. She's copying the media, everybody who cares to listen. She submits those complaints all over the place. But we've handled her complaints. And then what we've done, we're going to meet with her so that we understand the issues fully. So our stakeholder relation is in the process of convening a meeting so that we attend to the issue. But we're aware that Discovery also met with her, that is the board of Discovery, as well as the administrator of Discovery relating to that, trying to sort the issues out just to get to the core of the complaint that she has. It has improved successful because she's complaining regardless of the explanations, and they even given her the direct line of the complaints. But we'll do the same exercise. We'll invite her so that we sit down. But in respect of the complaints that she has sent to us, we've dealt with them. That's all from complaints.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I'm going to deal with a number of questions, but my colleagues will fill in. The question that was raised was in relation to the staff attrition as to whether we've got empowerment programs and performance management systems. Yeah, we do have those programs in place. We've got a performance management system. We've got also a professional development policy where non-performance we do assist. But in the case of the employee whom we terminated due to non-performance, it was because we've tried everything possible within our policies. Like, for example, we gave the person temporary disability and all the benefits that were available to us. The person was absent from work for about 104 days in a year. So clearly that amounted, we needed to take some form of action in that regard. So we had to terminate the service of that particular individual. And having gone through also awarding a temporary disability with all the benefits that are available to us. The other question was related to irregular expenditure. There were a number of irregular expenditures. I'm going to deal with all of them. The first one was that we had an irregular expenditure this year and last year and not this year, and that what have we done about the 193 condemnation, and were there any consequences with regard to that, and whether there were some criminal cases related to the irregular, the former register, all this. I'll deal with those. In terms of the irregular expenditure, as I explained, with regard to this 939 rand that we have disclosed, was related to the expenditure of one financial year. We awarded a contract to an internal service provider. Our internal audit services are sourced. We went out on tender. But that tender, in that tender, in terms of the scoring, the highest bidder was going to be a very established entity like Deloitte. It was Deloitte in actual fact at that point in time. But given that we subscribed to this issue of empowering emerging entities, especially BEE entities, we then awarded that tender to an entity called Secular Transition, which is only black-owned, female-owned, subscribing to the principle of BEE in government. So we have not specified that in the tender. That is why it resulted into an irregular community. So it's a contract of over 3 years. That is why we're just applied for condemnation now, because the contract has not ended. We'll revisit that, and the condemnation will ultimately be given. With regards to whether we have a criminal case open for in relation to the former resident, yes, indeed, we've referred this matter to the NPA. The other aspect of that investigation, a decision was taken by the minister, but we've got a case with the NPA, and we've opened that case last year already, and there's not been any progress in that regard. Well, it's beyond us. We know what's happening in the NPA side. The other issue that was raised was whether we're still renting or buying the building. As I've indicated, when we entered into the lease agreement in 2013, there was an option to purchase this building, and we have since embarked on the feasibility, on a due diligence exercise to purchase this building. We've been given an outright purchase price of 143 million, and by the landlord, because he's the owner of the building, she has given us that price. But we were conducting our own independent evaluation exercise so that we can see whether we're buying at the right price, because we know what consequences can there be if we got out of the price, out of the market. One may lose his job if we're not exercising due diligence and due care. So we're in that particular cycle. We've received one valuation which is close to 100 million. So there's already a difference of 43 million. So we must just exercise due care whether we are buying at the right price. So we're in that particular process now. The issue of permit, Honorable Chair, permit is established in terms of an Act of Parliament called the Parliament Provincial and Medical Schemes. I don't know of what year was that. It's an apartheid legislation. So in terms of it's an act that provides for members of parliament, provincial members of parliament, and the judges to belong to that medical aid scheme. You are obliged as members of parliament to belong to that in terms of that establishment of that particular act. So until such time that act is revised by yourselves, you may not be able to move away from this scheme. But we are regulating it as well. We've had a number of meetings, for example, with Chinoz, the deputy speaker, is the chairperson of the Board of Trustees in terms of that act. Even Noma India Fekir-Quest, she was still the chairperson. We had met with her. We've also conducted a routine inspection in the scheme. One of the directives that we've issued was that you need to be looking, the Board of Trustees must be looking at the service provider, because, especially the administrator side, because this permit was administered by scheme since inception, since many, many years. So if you could look into changing the administrator med scheme, maybe there could be a way of you looking into the premium that we are paying, because the administrators, as you know, are making profit in terms of the scheme is not a profit-making entity, but the administrators. So, but we are regulating parliament as well, and not necessarily because it's a scheme of parliament. We do meet with the chairperson of the board. I think I've dealt with the questions. The issue of parliament, I think Craig can deal with the parliament issue as it relates to the investigation and the findings that we've got. And I think the chairperson of council will deal with the appointment of and conflicts, if any, of our new CEO. Performance indicators, yes, or as to whether we're making any progress with regard to achieving it. As we have indicated, if you look at those indicators, most of them is not due to non-performance or such, but the first one, for example, was that our budget was not approved in time. It was just because there was a delay in the processing of that between the National Department of Health and the National Treasurer. The other one was in respect of us making an input to the NHI process, which indicated that at the time we were still awaiting the gazetting or the publication of the white paper. The white paper only came out in December. not made any input, but we have subsequently made input in that regard. I think I've covered most of the questions. The contribution increases for schemes. What we normally do is that every year we issue out a guideline to schemes where to say that they must be able to increase the scheme within the inflation target. But we do not necessarily have the mechanism to impose or force them to increase to a particular level, because there are circumstances within the scheme, the operational circumstances. But we do not have the legislative mandate to prescribe an increase of the contribution rates. We just issue guidelines in terms of our inflation. We do that every year.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, members of the committee. On the Polmed matter, I think it's important to note that it had its origin in an inspection conducted by the Compliance and Investigations Unit of the Council for Medical Schemes, and that uncovered a range of very, very unfortunate issues, most of which related to the principal officer of the medical scheme. Action was taken as a result of that particular inspection. It was found that a number of the aspects which related to travel and to other things which weren't properly authorized and a number of issues related to gifts occurred on the watch of that particular board. Now, of course, in terms of the Medical Schemes Act, the Board of Trustees are required to exercise fiduciary responsibility and they're required to be fit and proper. So the moment conduct of this nature comes to the fore concerning a CEO, principal officer in this case, obviously it immediately reflects on the board. The office took immediate steps to identify which members of the board were in place at that particular time, and there were six particular trustees in terms of those who were present on the board when the issue occurred. There was engagement with the scheme, and as matters currently stand, out of the six, four will be leaving the scheme as of the end of November, and the others as of the end of February. The principal officer of the scheme has also parted ways with the scheme as we speak. And of course there are ongoing matters of an enforcement and regulatory nature and engagement with the scheme. There's been a lot of activity from the South African Police Union, litigation, the annual general meeting of the scheme had to be postponed as a result of that, and there's also been further series of litigation. So the scheme isn't in a pleasant place at the moment, but everything is stable, under control. The office is engaging with them, Honourable Chair, and obviously the issues regarding regulation and the regulatory imperatives are in place at the moment in terms of monitoring, very closely monitoring that runoff. New board will obviously come in place. There is already a board of trustees, new members who are on the scheme. The scheme is correct as we speak. So it's quite capable of functioning. So I think that's very important to note. The scheme is not dysfunctional. It's able to function. It's able to take decisions. It's an acting principal officer. So everything at the scheme is actually in good shape. And the other issues which arose as a result of the inspection are the ones that we're essentially dealing with as part of the runoff around the medical scheme. Thank you.
Sorry, I think there was the question on risk equalization fund. Now, I got to council when that was already stopped, you know, the whole. But at that stage, De Villiers was, in fact, involved in developing it. Whilst we may see merit in that, there were certain sort of issues that were raised at that time. And I think maybe De Villiers could talk on that, as well as the solvency framework issue.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, the risk equalization, as we've seen earlier today, the schemes do not compete at the same level. There's significant differences in terms of the amounts paid due to differences in risk profiles. And that is an ongoing thing. Yes, We still continue to collect the data. We now call it a scheme risk measurement, but we do not have a system in place to go live if that request is put to us, but it is very important information to monitor the risk profiles of the medical schemes. Going forward, the transition phase of the NHI, in the NHI white document, there's a reference to virtual pooling at some point when all the GEMS members and then the Bonnetters and Palmed and maybe even other schemes where there are government employees on, when they move to the NHI, one need to look at the rest of the beneficiaries who's going to stay over in the risk profile for the protection of those beneficiaries and schemes. So I think going forward, we will have another debate on how you're going to protect those beneficiaries, especially if you're young and healthy, move out of the private medical scheme industry, it will have an impact. Solvency framework, there was a question on a solvency framework. Yes, we published a circular. We've given the industry more time to comment on the circular because of the publication of the white paper and to give everybody enough time. We did receive feedback from the industry. If I remember correct, we've received feedback from 18 stakeholders on that circular that was published. We presented to our council and we also had a workshop with our council. I think one must just realize this is going to be a journey. It's not that we're going to change the solvency framework overnight. It will be a journey. We will run it parallel with the current 25% and look what is the impact on the industry before we make a final decision. Of course, it can have an impact on the industry, and we need to make sure whatever the decision is, that at the end of the day, it is to the benefit of the beneficiaries. We're going to continue with that project. And we will in November have a workshop with the industry where we will discuss the comments and get clarity on some of the comments. The collapsing of the medical schemes from 144 to 83, yes, it happened. Mostly it was amalgamations. One must also understand amalgamations. Your small schemes, they're very sensitive to volatility and claims. If you've got, say, for example, one patient with hemophilia, there are examples in the industry where patients had claims of between 6 million and 13 million. Now just imagine if a small scheme faced a claim of 6 million for one patient or 13 million for one patient. So to a certain extent, the consolidation of the schemes actually helped the industry to strengthen their risk profiles over time. What is the sweet spot? I don't know at this stage, but most probably we will see more consolidation going forward. Then the price increases and escalation in the premiums, and what we've seen in the newspapers lately, 15% and even more than 15% increases. In our submission to the Health Market Inquiry and also previous letters to the Department of Health, we've asked there must be price regulation. We do not regulate the providers, and it was very clear in our submission to the Health Market Inquiry that there must be a price regulatory body to bring back price regulation. If you look at the proportional benefits paid out to hospitals and specialists, only those two disciplines, 60% of the 138 billion, is paid to hospitals and to specialists, and they're not regulated. So that is very important, and I think we're all waiting for a positive feedback from the Health Market Inquiry, how we're going to take that forward. Then I think that the price regulation is really an important one. There was also a question on this graph, on the schemes, the percentage increase and the percentage decrease. That was just on membership. And maybe Palmet is not in that graph because there was maybe no significant change. So the upper half is where schemes, there was an increase, positive increase in their membership, and the lower part where there was a decrease. For example, there was an increase for Discovery in their membership and for BankMate and for Woolworths and so forth. But then for GEMS and other, and there was a decrease in their membership of I think 3.1%. Well, one must just remember what happened together with a decrease, what we've seen over the years, when there's a decrease in a membership, most of the time the beneficiaries that exit the scheme are you young and you're healthy. So one must be very aware of that. The moment when the young and healthy exit the scheme, then the scheme end up most of the time with the old and the sick. The next moment your body will see there's an increase in the average age, there's an increase in the pension ratio, the claim premium ratio will go up, and most of the time the scheme can even make an operating loss. So it is very, the growth is critical. There was a question what we can do for the industry and the beneficiaries and so forth. It is very difficult. I personally believe most of the members that belong to a medical scheme are first of all employed, and they receive a decent salary. If you're not employed and do not receive a decent salary, then it is very difficult to belong to a private medical scheme. So job creation and economic growth is critical. That will filter through to the private medical scheme industry if you want to see growth. And obviously, you need to have growth in the younger age bands. Otherwise, the cost will go up. And that is one of the things that we now currently experience in a number of schemes where there's no inflow of the young and healthy, then the cost will go up. But it is more complicated than that. We've got also the NHI. And if you, there was also a question on mandatory membership. I'm not sure how to answer or to deal with that question in the light of the proposed NHI. But mandatory membership could have helped the medical schemes, but obviously there's a bigger picture that we also need to look at. Also, there was a question, my hospital proportion, the 37.1%, that was for all hospitals. I think on page 130 in the annual report, we've tried to explain it there also. The proportion of the amount paid out to the public hospitals will only make decimal changes. In fact, a very small proportion of benefits is paid to public hospitals. And that also should be a concern for government, because the recovery rate of beneficiaries utilizing the facilities in the public environment, the facilities are not actually getting money back. There's a problem of how they submit claims, and then administrators will reject the claims. If there's not a valid ICD-10 and so forth on the claim, the administrators will reject it, and then they will not pay for those services that was offered by the public facility. And that is also another unfairness, I think, in the whole system in total. My colleagues must please help me if I've missed something here. Thank you.
There was a question on these principal officers' salary agenda. But I think you had a slide generally on what principal officers earn, and you saw it was quite high.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I think my slide was just showing the level at which some of the principal officers are remunerated at, and linking it with the size of the various medical schemes, which could be indicative of possibly complexity and maybe justify. But also there is nothing in the Medical Schemes Act that gives the council the powers to, determine what the level of appropriate level of remuneration for principal officers is. It's similar to trustees, which is why there was a recommendation to further strengthen the provisions of the Medical Schemes Act.
I think one of the things that was raised was that Waterfall Hospital and problems with the doctor, that sort of type of issue. Now, I know you mentioned partly, but the one unfortunate bit is that we do not have any say over hospitals. We don't control hospitals at all. We don't regulate them. And they aren't being regulated. And also that doctors, if there are problems there, that really has to go to the health professional counseling, not only doctors, but again, health professionals. And if they are overcharging, and if it's a PMB, and they didn't pay in full, then that is what can come to the Council for Medical Schemes, where they are going against the statute relating to PMBs or so, then those are the complaints that we do get. Now, there was another issue relating to conflict of interest which came there. And, Honorary Chairperson, I would probably recommend that Dr. Sokufa just probably excuse us for a while, because it may be a sensitive issue.
Dr. Sokufa stood up and the chairperson. So I must say, well, members, on the issue that is related to Dr. Sokufa, there is a proposal from the chair of the board. If we can write for discussing that matter, can he express himself? Are members comfortable with that? Agreed? You may say.
Thank you, Chairperson. Now, I had mentioned in some of the introductory remarks that we went through a very vigorous process when it came to the appointment. We started off, by the way, with, I think, 21 applications. And with the shortlisting, it came down to 10, one of whom then decided to pull out and take another post with us, and that was also quite a good candidate. There were 9 left. The 9 then had to make presentations, impromptu presentations. We gave them cases, and they had to then make presentations. And we then took 4 of the top, and Dr. Sokufa was one of those. He did very well. The issue then came in that thing. I did ask specific questions, and there were 2 areas where there was a conflict of interest. One was relating to the controversy about prescribed minimum benefits, and the other was related to the practice coding numbers that we had, and there has been a conflict with the council in this regard. It was then clear that he answered that he will go with the policies of the Council for Medical, and that whatever views he has cannot conflict with that. The other issue, and we accepted that, the selection committee felt that we should accept that because he did well in other areas. The next sort of problem is, or the issue that was raised, was that will he be resigning from the Board of Healthcare Funders? And he's agreed, he's resigned from them as of the end of October to commence work on the 1st of November. So he's resigned. The issue then arises that would he be harboring some of his views to the detriment of the Council for Medical Schemes? I think this is the concern. And one of the advantages that exists, the way the council functions, it acts on policies and the act itself, the statutes that are there. And any person who would go against the statutes and acts against that could be found guilty of going against the statutory requirements. So, and also that no individual can make all final decisions. It is often discussed. Things are discussed at the managerial level. The management committee has its regular meetings, and a lot of the issues, those that are related to policy, has to come to council. And the council will take responsibility for any deviation from policy or any conflict of interest that is to the detriment of council. So that's my response to that. concern of yours.
Thanks, Jefferson, for your response. But you know, sometimes we should avoid appointments that are questionable, that will lead to a public uproar where people will raise will not have confidence and trust in terms of ethics and so on and so on. Because obviously, if a person has worked for a certain, I'll say a company, for more than 10 years, like him, who have served, how do you then divorce yourself from that company with when 2 months down the line you were in court and you know, all those questions arise. That's why I'm raising this thing. Thank you, Chairperson. I'm not sure whether the answer is satisfactory or not, but I'm just
saying. Sorry, Chairperson, may I just add on? Thank you for that, and I can assure you that we're going to be doubly vigilant in this whole matter. The issue also is that it wasn't the council that makes the final decision. This is an appointment that has to have the approval of the minister. And this went also to the minister. And the minister received the whole outline of the processes that were followed. And also the DG, the present Director General of Health, was at the final selection sort of process and the interview process. We will, and I think the point that you make is one that tells us one should be cautious in this whole matter, and I accept that.
I want to make a humble proposal that as the committee, we have then been informed that the minister and the DG, who obviously are accountable to the committee, have been involved in the okay. Will it not be appropriate that maybe as the committee, because I think it's one of our responsibilities, to raise whatever we want to raise to the minister and the DG after what then they have explained to us some of the issues in moving forward. I do think that we will be in a subject, it will be a little bit unfair because they are saying at the end, it is this structure and this person, this political head and administrative head that have then taken a decision on the matter. So that's why I then think that it is there because both the minister and the DG at the end, they do have to account and respond to our concern at the committee. I wanted to make that humble appeal.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I agree and I support that. Just to say, though, that you know, the public trust is very important, and because of the history, people are weary. And no means crossing aspersions on your candidate. We accept that he's fit for purpose, and if that's the case, in your opinion, and the DG and the minister, we accept that. But you've got now a responsibility to rebuild that trust. So how you communicate this to the public is very important. And so we'd ask you just to be very sensitive to that.
All right. I do think that, it's one of those difficult issues that as a committee that we are finding ourselves. But I think we'll equal the task because at the end we are to. And we appreciate
the fact that you were open and honest to us, because it would also be another thing, the issue of trust. If we then pick up that later outside and then we say, but they were in front of us, the matter, some of the issues were not raised. But thank you very much. There's a process that I would have loved to propose, but I think I must also, because I'm not chairing my own meeting, I'm chairing the meeting with members. There's a process that I think I will recommend to the committee at the appropriate time on how best we think that we can then be empowered more on all the processes, the whole know-how, and moving forward of the Council for Medical Scheme. The reason is precisely because all of us here have got constituency areas that we are deployed to, and in those areas we are confronted with difficult questions from members of the community who will expect, in the mere fact that you are a member of parliament, you are expected to know everything that is happening in the world and in the country. And at the end of the day, we have got different expertise and some other level, which leadership, it's not about, leadership is not about being scared of saying, I don't understand. Leadership is about saying, I don't understand, I need to be empowered. And in my view, that is leadership. And I do think that we will then come back to you if the committee agrees on the process of, because you have got that responsibility of empowering us, of assisting us in some of the clear, some grey areas, in areas where you think that we've got limitations. As I've said at the end, we are also victims. Myself, when I went for a particular surgical procedure, it's only after, when I was told that I must pay 6,000, I said, what? And the procedure has been performed. I can't say, fine, come take this thing off, I don't want them anymore. But this thing that, first the doctor, which I'm a bureaucrat, don't explain that, you know, this procedure that you want, this is what it entails. But it also reflected on ignorance on my side, that I should have then tried to say, I want to make to go and to the surgeon to perform this, what are the issues that I must look into. But secondly, which may be not now, when you come back, it can't be that medical aid, our people are being milked. Our people are being milked, and we are not. Okay. I don't want to say we. I am not apologetic. I can never be apologetic in questioning the National Health Insurance, because it's also about ensuring it can never be profit before health. It can't be, and it has shown here that. There are questions that I didn't want to ask. I still think, as I've said, you are going to speak with my colleagues to check, because there are some areas where really we are, the, by virtue of being public representatives, we represent our people, irrespective of class, gender, or race, and age, for that matter. But how then to ensure that our people understand that they've also got a responsibility? Rights goes with responsibility. We know for a fact that medical aid has been abused, if they are not still being abused, by members themselves. So we've got different experiences about the issue of medical aid, how GP conduct themselves, how private hospitals conduct themselves. What I still don't understand, which I believe maybe it's another question for another time, that why are we not going to public institutions when they are? We conducted an oversight in one province. which province is that, and which is. So it means, it doesn't mean that all our public institutions are in one place. When I was talking to counselors, I said that, so you want to be members because you think you can't take a patient to Durand, you can't go and be seen at Durand. They said, you. I said, for God's sake, public representatives frown when they are advised to go to a public hospital. Yes, there are challenges, I agree. There are challenges, I don't dispute that. But the other second thing before I is that they are private hospitals that are using public. There are doctors in the private sector that are using public hospitals. So we call Nalendo, as much as it is in catering, and it's there even in health, have you picked that up? Are our people aware that if I go to a private orthopedic, but the procedure will be performed at Oranginza, but I'm going to be charged? Are our people aware? Those are the things that if we talk about empowering our people, and you are an institution that is to assist us to ensure that our people understand. And we must not assume that even members of parliament, they are aware of that. I'm just making an example. When I'm saying not even members of parliament, maybe some other people, middle class, whatever, students. So I'm saying it's quite a complex environment which our people must understand, that when as health activists we are saying it can never be profit before health, how do you unpack that for them to understand that at the end they've also got a role in the responsibility to play? I fought with a session when I looked into the list of things, a swab, an ordinary cotton swab was priced in. I said, oh my God. But what else can I do? And I didn't even want to tell that person that I'm the chairperson of the portfolio committee, or let alone the chairperson, the public representative. So it is, we are subjected, we are exposed to a number of things, not because of whatever, because of innocent ignorance. And institutions, together with the Department of Health and ourselves, when we go out, we must understand that we've got that responsibility. And again, we won't shy away in all the policies and the programs that we're putting in place, supporting government, that we are addressing a particular historical and ideological legacy. Not for only for ourselves only, but for the benefit of our children and our great-grandchildren. Thank you very much. You are welcome, Chair. You okay?
I think you know, we've come to an end, and I would just like to thank you and your committee. I know this is a very complex issue, and healthcare in itself, different elements of it are complex. But I was really delighted at the questions that came through, that despite this being very complex, there were very, very relevant and searching questions that were put up. So, you know, I was also getting worried that we're putting across things that would it, but it seems to have gone through. And my final sort of offer is that we do have, first of all, we have training sort of sessions for trustees and principal officers and that. But we could set up a very special sort of whatever you want to call it, a learning session or understanding what is happening in the private healthcare system. We're willing to set it up if you require that. It is an offer, and we will gladly accommodate you on that regard.
Thank you very much. You have left the the bag. But still, members of we will have to engage and see and consult with the powers to be. But I don't, because we're not only doing it for ourselves, but we'll be doing it for the entire institution. So thank you very much. It's always a pleasure. Always remind me to take the question to you.